Fitheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings Short Pours, episode 80. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. Tonight, our topic is Unico and Wildcard Pairings. We broadcast around the world, picked up on Podbean, of course, broadcast on YouTube. Appreciate you tuning in anywhere you are. I'm here with my co-host, as always, Robbie Rass. Robbie, what's going on, brother?
Just recovering from a heartbreaking Giants loss.
Oh.
It's tough when you piss away a 7-1 lead.
Yeah, that's not right.
And lose 8-7, but whatever.
I mean, whatever.
I can just press the buttons that they put me in a position to press. It's really all I can do. I
got play
to
hit better, bro.
Got to hit the home run button a couple of times today, which was fun.
That's all right.
It was the other team hitting them, but so what?
He doesn't really mean that.
Yeah.
He doesn't really mean that. It's anguish on his face when he said that.
Yeah.
Just a heads up to your audience, this is the short pour edition of Sharing Our Pairings. We're kind of shaking it up after the IPCPR. We're going to have some short editions, which will probably be about the 20 to 30 minute mark, roughly, so essentially half an episode of Sharing Our Pairings. Keeping it short, keeping it clean. Hope you enjoy the new format. Won't be every time, but we'll toss it in. And, of course, like I said, we're doing Unico and Wildcard. Now, we're both pairing the Liga Privada Unico UF13, but two different versions, which is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, it's a little bit funky. You've got the UF13 Dark, which was released, I believe, in 2014. It may have been 2013. I think
it might be 2013.
Yeah, I might be speaking out of turn. I'll be 100% audience. When I'm looking for stuff like this, I go to CigarCoop.com or I go to Half Wheel, and they tend to have all of the information that I want as far as that's concerned. So I'm looking at this pre-release. Was in February 2013. The version that I've got came from Cigar.com 2013, and I don't know if the blend's exactly the same. The size is a tiny bit different. It is the one I'm smoking is 5 1/4, and yours is 5.5 by 52, and mine did not have the fun little flag cap on there.
Which of course I've since cut off because I'm smoking it, but it's kind of a cool touch.
Yeah, I like stuff like that. I mean, I'm a visual guy, so you get the little pigtail caps and that kind of thing up there. I enjoy that. So we are smoking. I believe they're the same blend.
They gotta be.
And if you go to Half Wheel, they have a post called the Liga Privada UF13 appears at Cigar.com. This was in January of 2013, and I did buy 5-pack at the time. When they came out, I'm not exactly sure if it was a 5-pack, but maybe I bought 2. and I did work my way through them. I've only got a couple left. But this cigar's got 3 years on it, and so does yours, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're still making these, and they're making more of them now. I mean, especially with all the FDA stuff, all the Unico stuff is going to be much more available now. We don't have numbers that are going to be made or anything like that, production numbers, but one can only assume that they'll be significantly more available. We know that the T52 pigs, the number 9 pigs that were impossible to get your hands on, are going to be a regular production now. And what I would like for them to do, when you start, especially with the Unico stuff, we're getting off topic a little bit early, and this is supposed to be a quick show. there's people that went out and collected that stuff, right? I mean,
I kind of did, yeah.
Yeah, and paid good money for it. Granted, no one asked anybody to buy something on the secondary market.
Yep.
You know,
force in your hand.
Yeah, no one made you do it. But now the market's going to be flooded with this stuff, so it's going to be – those things are going to lose their value. I'd like to see the sizes tweaked a little bit. You know what I mean? Like make these new T52 pigs and these two new number 9 pigs.
Maybe like a slightly longer format or something.
Yeah, like a half inch longer – not a half inch, a quarter inch longer or something.
Something.
I mean, I understand that there's molds and blah, blah, blah. I get it, and it's probably ridiculous to request it. But anyway – so yeah, we're both smoking Unicos, basically the same cigar, slightly different. So full transparency.
It's got that Connecticut broadleaf, which you know they love to use. That Connecticut broadleaf, it's special. It's delicious. It's got a Brazilian Matafina binder, which I think kind of gives it that great spiciness or sweetness. Pardon me, with a little bit of raisin. That's typically what I associate with Brazilian tobacco, and of course Nicaraguan filler. So mine's, like you said, 5.5 by 52. Yours is 5 1/4 by 52. And these are probably, to me, one of the most approachable Unicos in the sense that it doesn't smoke like a T52. It's very creamy. It's very sweet. it's kind of in the medium, barely medium plus category, which is kind of a departure because, you know, I find a lot of the other Unicos are a little bit more full-bodied, like the Velvets and the L40s and that kind of thing.
Yeah, this one's got some nice sweetness to it. And I was actually just looking on the Unico Siri UF 13 Dark pre-release review on Half Wheel, and there's actually four different versions.
Oh my God.
Of the UF 13. There was the 2011, which is a 5x52. There is a 2012 UF 13 Dark, which is 5.25x52, which is the same size as mine. Then there's a 2013 UF 13 Cigar.com, 5.25x52, and the production UF 13, which is 5.5x52, which is the dark. That is what you're smoking. So, not to belabor the point, but
it's a lot always, of UF-13s.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things. And with the 2011s, there probably wasn't a ton of those floating around. And yep. The thing with these, they're all slightly different sizes, so you can tell the difference in the year that they were released. So I imagine Drew Estate would probably do something like that. For me, the cigar had, and it's, you were here when I took it out of the cello, and the cello has got that yellowness to it. I don't know if you can, if it's really translating on the video. Because that kind of reminds me of like a used condom color to it, which is always
not really what you want.
But that's, yeah, it's just, that's whatever reason when I see guys who post the quote unquote yellow cello photos, it's just like, dude, it just looks like an old condom. Anyway, but I digress.
Awkward.
When I popped this out of the cello, it had a really strong, strong barnyard, almost a soury kind of smell to it. And you saw my reaction. It was kind of visceral reaction. It was like, whoa, hey, what's happening here?
You were definitely worried there was some funk going on.
Yeah, it had a funk to it, but it's smoking great. It burns a little bit funky right at the top, but with another full disclosure, my about a week ago, when I got back from IPCPR, my the humidity in my cabinet was down to 52%.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I had to replace the remote on my Cigar Oasis. And I'm not sure. I tend to unplug it when people are staying because it's in the guest room and it makes noise at night. Mm. So maybe the constant plugging and unplugging jacked it up. So things are good now. So this may have dried out a little bit over about a week's time. Shouldn't be a big deal.
Sounds like you're a candidate for that Cigar Oasis Wi-Fi module, my friend.
I actually have it, and I've never set it up.
Oh, man, I would have that set up on day one.
Yeah, you've got that OCD spreadsheet thing going.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in case you haven't noticed, I don't have that.
Yeah.
So it's
the artist in you.
Yeah, I thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
It is.
I've got it as just kind of, you just need to link it up, and I haven't done it. So that's my own fault. But anyway, yeah, smoking really nice. It's got a nice sweetness to it. There's definitely that spice. Leather, earth, you know, kind of raisiny flavor that you were talking about. Some sweetness, some dark bittersweet, dark chocolate in there as well.
Definitely.
And you had mentioned, I don't know if you were talking about your whatever you're drinking. I don't even know what you're drinking tonight. Wild Card Show. Yeah. Ooh, no, thank you.
But there's a story there. It's actually good.
You had mentioned marshmallowy kind of flavor, which obviously we're not getting from your tequila. I'm getting that through this UF-13 too, which is why I went with the beverage that I chose, but I'll let you go first.
Roger that. So I am going tequila, and with an asterisk, because tequila evokes, you know, doing shots in college of, you know, tequila white or tequila gold, and it's just nasty stuff. I hate it. But when I went to Mexico for the first time ever, I got a bit of a tequila education at this really awesome distillery near San Sebastian. This is in Jalisco. And Jalisco is one of that's basically the state that's authorized to produce tequila. And I'll hold this bottle up because this doesn't really look like any tequila you've probably ever seen. And it's designed, and like I said, I went through the whole distillation process. It reminds me of scotch or whiskey. Like it's just, that's how they produce it. They produce it with great care. It's not intended to be shot. It's intended to be sipped. It's a high end spirit. It's produced with 100% agave. And the one that I've got is the Reposado, and Reposado just means that it's been aged, I think, typically between, I think it's 6 months, but less than a year. And then if you go Añejo is, and I think I'm saying that wrong, I think it's actually Añejo, because Añejo is something very bad in Spanish, but I digress. That means that it's been aged for more than a year, and I think up to 2 or 3 years, and then there's sort of different grades. But at any rate, I digress. It's really good. To me, it evokes that spirit of whiskey and scotch and not that sort of nasty, bitter funk of what I think most people associate with tequila. And like I said, I was not a fan of tequila, and they really made a believer out of me. We came back with a couple bottles, and this bottle from San Sebastian, which I held up, is a good example. It's 38% ABV. Now with tequila, that's kind of typical. 38% is kind of where they produce, but it can be arranged. There's no set high mark other than the minimum amount is 31. The high mark is 55. And if it's imported in the United States, it has to be 40% minimum. I don't know why that is, but that's the law. So it's kind of cool. It's essentially crafted with blue agave, and blue agave is sort of specific to Jalisco in Mexico, but it's good. It's I get like a ton of really sweet melony off the nose, which we're talking about tequila here, and that should tell you what a high end spirit it is. It's very sweet off the nose. Maybe get a little bit of almost like a brown sugar off of it. But I've been kind of sipping on it as we've been chatting, and I'm going to keep doing some sips while you can introduce your first beverage, pouring short pours.
Short one. I've never had an interest in tequila. I just never have. I mean, it's probably, like you said, because the only tequilas I've ever had are crap tequilas that are meant to just get you drunk or be mixed in a drink where you can't really taste them. It's never been anything that I've wanted to seek out, but I'd be curious to try something along the lines of what you're drinking. The bottle, when you hold it up, it looks like a bottle of like extra virgin olive oil or something. It does not look like a bottle of tequila.
Not at all.
For those of you who are listening and can't see us. I decided to, in a stunning turn of events, go with a beer today. I actually stopped on my way home from the ballpark to get this specific beer because I knew we were going with this specific cigar, and I'll go into reasons why. The Barista from Clown Shoes, it's a breakfast brown ale, which... just the title, Breakfast Brown Ale, just sounds really perfect to me. And there's a picture of a young woman. She's got angel's wings and clown shoes on, and she's making some coffee. It's a breakfast brown ale brewed with espresso, oatmeal, and milk sugars. So for those of you in the know, you'll know that when you go with milk sugar, lactose, it is unfermentable. So it's not going to have an impact on your ABV, but it is going to impart some sweetness and mouthfeel, creamy mouthfeel. So that's what that's all about here. It's actually probably, you could say this is an imperial brown ale because it's 8.5% alcohol by volume. And there's not a lot of information about it. It's available in 22-ounce bombers, which is what I picked up, and it is currently in production. Clown Shoes legend Brown Ale put away her dancing shoes to focus on extracting espresso, brewing coffee, and pouring latte art with zen-like focus. The Barista Breakfast Brown is created with Maris Otter malt, flaked oatmeal, cold-brewed espresso, milk sugar, and the spirit of angel wings. Like that addition of the spirit of angel wings. That comes straight from their website.
That is a lot of verbiage. You had me at the coffee milk stout, but that's some good verbiage.
Yeah, it's interesting. And if you pull up a Beer Advocate, score is an 89 on Beer Advocate, which is very good, and 45 reviews. So,
An 89 is a good score? That seems like a good score to me out of 100. That's a good score.
It's underneath, it's like on ours, when we say 89, that's a 5-pack buy. When you go to Beer Advocate, 89 falls into the category of very good. And you get up into like exceptional and like otherworldly and all kinds of other nonsense, whatever they decide to call it. But as you can see, it looks
dark.
It looks a lot darker than it is. It's more of like a golden brown kind of underneath this. It's hard to, more of a mahogany. It's not super, super dark. And you can get a pretty good view through it. It's more red, really, than anything else. It's got a nice little creamy head on it. Definitely got a creamy mouthfeel to it. The nose on this thing, it's really like if you're sniffing on an espresso. It's got that coffee bitterness.
That sounds fantastic.
And there's a little bit of sweetness there. You can kind of smell, like if you smell ice cream, you know how you smell that? It smells sweet, which is kind of nondescript. It's like that. The coffee is clearly in there. And I've been cheating, and I already know if I like it or not. So I'm going to go ahead and we'll talk about yours here real quick.
Sure. So, again, going back to 100% agave tequila is not what you would expect out of a regular tequila. It's so light and delicate that I think if you went with a cigar that's any stronger than this UF-13, you wouldn't be able to taste the tequila at all. So that tells you just how soft it is. And it's got this kind of melony, salty finish to it, which is really interesting with the cigar. But I find myself kind of having to wait after I take a draw to take a sip because, again, we're right on the verge here where the cigar is. And this is not, you know, again, what I would classify as a dominant flavor profile for a cigar. The UF-13 is very nuanced, and yet even after I take a draw, I have to kind of wait a little bit to take a sip off the tequila so that I can get the flavors that I'm looking for. But they work well. I think this tequila might be a little bit more, believe it or not, appropriate for something lighter, like let's say a Cameroon wrapper, just throwing it out there. Or even I think the Underground Shade might actually be a great pairing with this tequila. I don't know if I'd do that for a breakfast, but maybe a late afternoon Underground Shade and this tequila might go really well together. And I think I might revisit that because I've certainly got enough tequila to go. So it's good. I'm enjoying it.
So for me, this UF-13, it's exactly how I remember it. There's some cocoa powder sweetness to it. It's not very creamy. It's not like a creamy milk chocolate. It's just kind of like that cocoa powder. And, excuse me, definitely got that chocolatey note, like I said, some earthy notes in there. There's some espresso in there as well, that kind of bitter coffee, which I think was lingering in the back of my head when I decided I wanted to pair with this coffee brown ale, which I had never had before, but I picked it up and put it down several times at my local BevMo, so I knew they had it, I knew it existed, I knew it was going to be on the sweeter side because it had that milk sugar in it. So the pairing works really, really nicely. The cigar gives me full body flavor on the tongue. There's that nice spice on the palate, which isn't too hot, but it's kind of just a nice black pepper. And there's that, like you said, it's nuanced, but there's enough flavor here to really get your attention, right?
Absolutely.
And when you take a sip of the barista here from Clown Shoes, nice creamy mouthfeel with some sweetness to it, but it's got that kind of kick of espresso. And it's tough to call this, I mean, obviously it's a brown ale. It's not as heavy as a porter. It's definitely not a stout. But there aren't too many brown ale characteristics to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a lighter milk stout is really kind of the best way to put it. But it's not super heavy. It's not kind of blowing your palate away. But there's a lot of flavor. There's even kind of a lingering fruitiness that's in there that is nondescript and kind of hard to put my finger on. But the pairing is really nice. It's accentuating the spice on the cigar and the full earthy meatiness that it's got, right? That sweetness kind of lingers on the tongue a little bit, gets a little bit washed out from the beer because the beer does have a sweet factor to it. But it's just kind of nice to go from get that sweetness, creaminess from the beer and then go into the more rugged earthiness and you finish it with some spice in the retrohale and start everything over again. It's very linear. It's very nice, kind of cyclical feeling that I really like, and I enjoy it. And it's kind of it can keep going. You know what I mean? Like just keep going. Yeah. Oh yeah. I'll crack open another one and light another one. Why not? It could turn into a really nice day if you've got a couple of these and a couple of UF-14s or 13s. Beg your pardon. You're good to go.
You know the thing, of course, about the Unicos, and I don't know about your stock, but I've only got a select number of UF-13s. In fact. Or Unicos in general, really, and I think I can date this UF-13 back to Paul. That's where I might have gotten it from.
Hmm.
I mean, for me, you know, if you said what are your favorite Unicos, I mean, it's hands down Elfine for different reasons, but you know, you've got a Connecticut broadleaf, and it's got a lot of tobacco. It's very approachable compared to, like, say, a Dirty Rat or a Feral Flying Pig. This is a very different smoking experience. I only wish I had more, but, you know, that's just tough.
Well, they're going to be more readily available, so.
Yeah. Get your hands on
them. You're going to be able to get your hands on more of them. Yeah, my stock kind of, it comes and goes. The UF-13 and the L-40 are the ones that I will shell out. market value for when I.
Well, because I mean, honestly, do you ever see them on? You don't see them on closeout because they're not a long. They're not around long enough for that.
No, you're right, and I don't know what I meant by when I said a ton of cigars because I'm going through samples and things for you.
Absolutely,
there are cigars that I target that I love personally that I want to have on hand. Age well.
Yeah.
And if I buy a box of something, chances are I'm not rushing my way through it. Not always a fact. That's not always the fact of the matter. Sometimes I buy a box and the next thing you know, it's like, oh crap, I got to buy another one. And there's, I mean, I could, La Colmena is one of them. The Casada 40th, Torna Classica. That's another one. So there's a couple of cigars that I'll constantly overturn my stock, but there's some, like a UF-13, if I see it and it's at a decent price, it's not jacked up, you know, I'll spring for a box. I actually bought, like I said, I bought the first 5-pack and then I did buy a box of the Darks, which I've worked my way through, but same with L-40s. But, you know, with the Dirty Rats, I like it, but I 5-pack or something, sure, but I tend to not spring for a box in those. Definitely not the Feral Flying Pigs because they just seem more common to me.
Yeah, well, and I think maybe to say what you said in my words, it's like when I go into a humidor, like let's say I'm visiting a new location with a new B&M and I go in there and I've kind of got a short list of cigars that I'm definitely going to grab if I see them on the shelf. And for me, the L40 and the UF13, that's on that list. You know, there's many cigars on the list. I mean, half of what Warp produced, most of the DeCrossier stuff, a lot of the Lozona stuff, and certainly the Protocol Lancero is now at the top of that list. But it's like, you know, there's cigars that I can get, but I'm not necessarily pining for them. But like I said, this is one of those cigars where if I go into this place, and like you said, the price isn't jacked up. Because, I mean, frankly, they were in limited supply. So I think some B&Ms knew they could kind of jack the price up. And, you know, whatever, people pay it. So it's fair market value as far as I'm concerned. But if I see it and it's a reasonable price, heck yeah, I'm buying a box. I might buy two, you know? Like, that's, I'm definitely coming out of there with more than a couple singles for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of places that I've seen them on the shelves, there's a limit. They won't let you buy a box.
Uh-huh.
You know, and maybe that'll change in the future. But I can't remember a time where I went to a shop and saw that they had either the UF-13 or the L-40 in stock, and I didn't buy as many as I could. Yeah. Unless the price was $17, $18, $19 a stick.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what, I'm not going to buy any because you're lining your pockets a little bit extra.
Yeah.
Which I get, whatever. It's not my place to judge that, but it's my place to decide. I judge it in the sense that I decide whether I want to pull the trigger on it, and I tend to avoid pulling the trigger that way. But, yeah, I mean, and I'm the same way, really, with Dirty Rats and Feral Flying Pigs. If I get a chance to buy a couple of them, you know, absolutely, I'll grab them, you know.
Yep.
But when it comes to boxes, it's really just those two that I'm going to make sure I have in my humidor.
Box purchases are always reserved for something very special because, you know, I mean, yeah, we smoke a lot of cigars, but as Robbie was saying, I mean, it's not a cheap investment to go in a box. I do like that they're served up in less than 20 or 25 counts, and I'm glad to see that there's a lot of retailers or manufacturers out there that are starting to produce 8 and 10 count and 12 count boxes because I think ultimately, I mean, I've got a fairly fair stocked humidor, and I don't necessarily want a 25 count box of cigars. I mean, yeah, if I love them, sure, but you know, 10 and 12 counts keep that price down, and I appreciate that for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and we've talked about that. It's usually like limited edition stuff is at 10 count boxes, but the 10 counts have been like you just mentioned it, the Protocol Lancero. That's in a 10 count box. That's an easy box buy.
I might buy five boxes of those.
Yeah,
so I might get out of hand.
It's funny, but it's funny when you think about it. Like, if it was a 50 count box, no, I wouldn't buy that. But I'll buy five 10 count boxes.
Would I buy a 50 cab of Protocol Lanceros? I just might. I mean,
that's probably pushing it. That's a big nut, bro.
That's a big nut to crack. That's like that. Those. What is that? That warped $1,000 cab for the to get in. That he was talking about the IPCPR.
I don't remember. We did a lot of interviews, man.
Fair enough. So, bring it back to the pairing here, because it is short pour. Really enjoy this tequila. I think if you can get it, like, and again, we're talking about high end sipping tequila. And there is a huge difference. You know, to me, it's like the difference between, you know, and I'm not going to throw any Scotch companies under the, but like a $20 bottle of No Age Statement blended whiskey versus a $75 of bottle of Glenfiddich. It's night and day difference. And here it's definitely night and day. But what, again, what's interesting to me is that it is so delicate that I wouldn't go stronger than this UF13. If you paired a T52 with this, it would blow the tequila out of the water. So I'm going to revisit this pairing and, you know, throw an Undercrown Shade at it. Throw a couple things at it because it's delicate, but it works. It's, I mean, you kind of nailed it where you said this is kind of one of those cigars, and certainly for me, one of these beverages where I could, if I had a couple of UF13s, I might sit back on a Saturday afternoon and have a couple and maybe tear it up.
It sounds like it would be perfect for like opening day in the NFL.
Yeah,
right? And absolutely. Figure out a way, at least for me, everybody's situation is different, but figure out a way where I get my TV out of my patio. And I'm just going to sit, I'm calling in sick to work. I'm taking the day off. It's Sunday, so whatever. If there's a Giants game, it's like, I can't make it in. And which I've never done. I've never once called in sick. I've worked there since 2006. Never once. I missed a game once right after my wedding. I got back from my honeymoon. I got a call like in the middle of the first inning, like, where are you? Like, I'm at Macy's. What's going on?
Whoops.
And yeah, he's like, well, you're supposed to be here. I said, oh, shit. Oops. We there we go. We got to edit that one out. Sorry, John.
Well, I don't think this is airing in the Armed Forces Radio Network, so I think we're safe.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, yeah, you could sit back with a couple of bombers and a couple of UF-14s and have a nice day. What I will say about this is I don't think with this UF-14 that I would go any stronger. I definitely wouldn't go barrel-aged. There's probably a lot of porters that I would avoid. I wouldn't really go with too many stouts because I feel like things are just going to get muddled. There's too much. Yeah. Going on with some of those beers to balance with the nuance of the cigar. I think the idea of this sweetened brown ale is heavier than I would go really with any other beer. Oddly, I think that like winter ales, spiced ales, something along the lines of like an Oktoberfest.
I was thinking the same thing, like a Saison or
Yeah, it might go quite nicely with this because there is a lot going on. But it's not blowing you out.
No.
It's got kind of a crisp dryness to it that is, like right now, my palate feels pretty clean. Mm-hmm. And I'm about halfway through the cigar, and the spice has picked up a lot. But I don't think I would go too much stronger as far as a beer is concerned. As far as spirit, I'd probably go with maybe a lighter bourbon, more on the, probably
less,
a little bit.
Less spicy, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit more on the sweeter side. I think of a bourbon that's not super heavy, but has a lot of nice flavor to it. I always think of Basil Hayden's for some reason. So I feel like that would be a nice pairing. But something spicy like a Booker's, no way, man. You're just going to blow it out.
And same, I think, applies to Scotch. You wouldn't want to go with a heavily sherryed Scotch with this because it would just like completely dominate the UF13. But if you had like a really nice Glenrothes or Glenfarclas, I mean, or even a Glenmorangie, oh, that would be perfect. That's right in the wheelhouse. It's again, it's weird because, you know, we're talking about something with a Connecticut broadleaf. It's got a lot of oomph to it, but it's got so much nuance. You don't want to lose those. To me, it's a little bit like audio. You don't want to lose those highs. You don't want to lose those lows. And this is one of those cigars that kind of delivers across the map. So,
yeah. Perfect, man. I like it. This was, I think this was a successful first short pour.
I agree. So as we were saying, sharing our pairings, drink better, but drink short? No, it doesn't make any sense. Drink better, but drink less. Thanks for tuning in.